We face both a very traditional problem of managing relationships between a rising power and an established power, but a very specific content of the problem of the United States and China. And it's exacerbated by the fact that we have very different political systems and we have very different views about how we should govern ourselves and how we should interact with the world. And this creates a very volatile and difficult circumstance. And there's no doubt that we have these differences that are not just differences of perception. They're differences of values. They're differences of the way we see the world. And yet we both understand that if we can find a way to manage these differences without coming into conflict, each of us will be better off.
We in the West would consider ourselves the established power, at least for the past century. China historically believes that it's actually not the rising power, but the historic power.
And that certainly is part of the overlay here. China, which has a glorious history, one of which it's quite proud, but also a recent history which has been more troubled. And particularly during the 19th century and the early years of the 20th century, the experience of China with the outside world was one of invasion, of occupation, of a sense that the country was humiliated by the outside. And so much of China's own strategy was influenced by not only its memories of its great period of glory, but also this period of humiliation. And I think it's been encapsulated in the most famous epigram from Mao Zedong, which was that China has now stood up.
China views many of our actions as a containment policy. Are we, in fact, trying to contain China, or are we managing the situation?
They certainly say that they are concerned that the U.S. policy is a containment policy, and I'm sure that there are some who genuinely believe that in China. But I also think it's part of a political strategy, which is an attempt to try to influence us and others by characterizing the American policy as a containment policy. They're trying to back us off a little bit. And so I think we have to take those official statements from China with a bit of grain of salt. At the same time, I also think that it's very clear that that's not the U.S. policy. I think one of the hallmarks of U.S. policy is a belief that actually it's in U.S. interest to have a successful China as a partner, as an engine of growth, and as an engine of stability.
China tends to take a unilateral approach. They like to engage countries one-on-one. What challenges does that pose for the rest of the region?
That's a very interesting observation, and it's certainly true, that China doesn't have a long history of alliances or partners. China believes that the alliances are a relic of the Cold War and part of the containment strategy. We believe that we can have alliances without them being directed against anybody else or having an enemy in common. I think that's one of the real challenges in managing the relationship.
The Chinese are in a heated dispute with Japan over a group of islands that are uninhabited in the South China Sea. And should there be some sort of inadvertent clash between those two, what kind of a position does that put us in?
Each side needs to be conscious of the fact that however strongly they feel about their respective positions on sovereignty, that there's a bigger stake here. China and Japan have incredibly deep ties, strong economic interests. And I think the big lesson of the last year is that whatever the differences are between countries, that unilateral exercises of force or coercion are simply unacceptable in the 21st century. And the United States has a very specific commitment to Japan through Article 5 of our security treaty, which recognizes that Japan does have the administration of these islands, and the United States has a responsibility under its treaty to support Japan in defense of its administration of those islands.
How much does the economy and China's economic relations factor into perhaps muting any potential military conflict?
Well, I think that's the big question. The optimists believe that because of the strong economic stake, that China will be restrained and will avoid unnecessary conflict. And on one level of kind of rational analysis, that makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, what we've seen through history is oftentimes that despite what seems like kind of in a standoff, objective perspective, each country acting rationally, that somehow individual decisions work against that. And the most poignant case, clearly something we're reminded of in this 100th anniversary of World War I, is that despite the strong economic ties that bound many of the countries of Europe together in 1914, that war still broke out.
Well, the last century has seen so many technological advances. Of course, we've been at the forefront of it, and that has helped to modernize our military capabilities and strengths. China has been able to modernize very rapidly as well, whether they developed something on their own, they bought it, or maybe acquired it in some other manner. They've been able to take advantage of this rapid modernization.
This is, I think, really one of the biggest challenges that we face, because we have great strengths. The United States is clearly the technological leader. Our military has capacities which far exceed anybody else. But we shouldn't underestimate the ability of China to do its own innovation, as you say, acquire technologies in a variety of different ways. And I think we have to recognize that the idea that one side or the other can get permanent technological advantage over the other is very limited. And while we have considerable advantages and we have very, very strong leads over China in almost every aspect of technology, we shouldn't be complacent about that. We ought to think about whether there are ways to stabilize this.
50 years ago, we're in a space race with the former Soviet Union, which led eventually to a partnership in space. Do we see similar opportunities perhaps with China, or is China more willing to go on its own for now?
I think we should explore them. I think that we should be prepared to do this. You know, it's interesting that because of the suspicions and the anxieties on our side, we've had a lot of restrictions imposed by Congress about space cooperation between the United States and China. So I think the example that you gave of our space cooperation with Russia is an example of how two sides can learn to get better trust with each other, especially in an area which is so sensitive.